The luck of the Irish says, help me count my lucky gold.
I'm a lucky, lucky leprechaun, 1,001 years old. And at the end of the rainbow, I count my lucky gold. In the secret place of the rainbow, I dance, it's so much fun. Help me count my pot of gold, up to 20 by ones.
One, two, three.
Testing good, huh? Huh?
Back up a little bit from the microphone.
Yeah, I'm like 12 inches away.
Hey, do I still sound the same?
I'm going to say you sound 10% better than usual.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm saying, like, from the first thing I said to now, does it sound any different?
Nope, you sound good.
Okay. All right. Then I'm pretty sure I know what the problem is. So, from the last time, anyway.
You know what the problem is? You sound good. There's no problem.
No. You know, because the last two times we've done the show, my audio's been kind of wanky, right?
Yes.
And so I think it's the actual room that I'm recording in. So I've moved to a different room now.
Oh, this room sounds good. Whatever, the acoustics are very, very good.
It's my bedroom. So.
I'm in my bedroom.
Awesome.
How? I don't know if that's – it's not really ironic, is it?
I'm in the toilet.
Let's
of course
go
you
take,
are.
Let's,
in
let's
more ways than one.
Nap, and we can say that we slept together.
There you go. No. Really, though, Scott, wherever you are, you're in your toilet, right?
Pretty much.
Wherever you go.
Life is a toilet. That's the name of my autobiography.
Good. I'm gonna write that song. All right. Well, this is take two for episode. What episode are we on? TheBigfootShow.com will tell me.
87 something. 128.
Not quite yet. This is episode 57. And we're recording on the 1st of December.
Hey, guys, carry on for just like 10 seconds. I got to take this sweatshirt off. And take a dump in the trash can. Hold on a sec.
All right. 10 seconds. Funk. So for everyone who's listening, we actually tried to record this 2 days ago and failed due to horrible technical problems. But here we are.
There it is.
Dun-dun.
Here we are.
And
happy holidays.
Same to you.
Yeah.
Paul was unable to be with us the other day, and I was hoping that, you know, we'd be able to work him in today, but unfortunately, no, we still haven't been able to work him in. So we have no Paul, just the three of us.
I can talk like this if you like.
That's a little more cockney than him.
Just slightly.
It's pretty horrible either way.
That's nearly racist.
Doesn't sound anything like Paul.
I, governor.
Let me tell you, it's a bunch of horse pucky. Hold on, I got another dog came in the room.
Oh, God.
Hold on. All right, Charlie.
You're rapidly becoming one of those people.
Oh, dear God. What a start.
And he didn't hear
you. Okay. Door was flying open.
I was hoping that Paul would be on because he and I could waste like 20 minutes talking about Doctor Who, but since he's not with us, we can't do that.
I finally watched my first Doctor Who episode ever.
Which one was that?
I put out some feelers on Facebook, like where do you start, since I think they've had like 128 seasons.
You start in 1963, and then you go forward.
Wow. Well, what people said was that it was that Tom Baker. I said, who was the best Doctor Who? And it seemed like consensus was Tom Baker.
See, now I would have said that, but now I think David Tennant is just a smidge better than Tom. I was just watching Tom Baker this morning, as a matter of fact.
Did he see you, or
he didn't see me? No.
Okay. I thought I saw three episodes, and it was the 1975 year.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. You know, I just knew it was supposed to be pretty good. A lot of people, and I thought it was pretty good. And even with the cheesy effects funny.
You got to watch City of Death, because City of Death is sort of a classic Tom Baker episode Douglas Adams helped write that script, so it's got so there's little witty bits in it that are pure Douglas Adams. So anyway, there's a little tip for our listeners: go watch City of Death. It's on Amazon streaming video. If you're a Prime member, you don't pay to watch it, so that's a little tip for you.
Awesome.
All right, so we got some stuff to get to.
There's been a lot of
thermal activity, interestingly enough. So we're going to start, I think, where we started 2 days ago. we're gonna start with this Olympic thermal, the Olympic Project thermal, the Grays Harbor thermal. It's also being referred to as the brown thermal, but we already have brown thermal, so we're not going to call it that. So it's this, and of course, everyone here now has seen it, correct? You guys have all seen this.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
So you made an interesting point the other day, Sam, that I've been thinking about. So we're going to kind of refer to something that no one will ever hear. The fact that, that they seem to be crowdsourcing the analysis of this. What did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant was, you know, when Derek came out with this, one of the things he said was, you know, we want to put our evidence out there quickly. You know, we don't want to sit on anything for weeks or months or whatever. And I think that that's in large part a backlash to the whole Ketchum and Erickson fiascos and the bitterness that has left.
Sure.
So he's really sort of trying to, you know, get ahead of the subject there and put this out there, whether that's, you know, right or wrong. But in putting it out there, I've seen more than once where the call has gone out of, if there is anyone who can bring more out of this video, please help us. And that is something that I really haven't seen much of, if at all, of someone putting evidence out there and immediately following it with, if you have the skills, if you have the ability, you know, help us bring more out of this evidence than what we currently have. And I think that that's great. I mean, even though the video itself, it's the equivalent of like a thermal Rorschach test. You're going to see what you want to see in it.
Yeah.
But that initiative of, you know, trying to use the internet and the Bigfoot community to, you know, to further the evidence, I think is pretty interesting. Now, the signal to noise ratio,
right,
and how that plays out, that remains to be seen. But at least on that level, I think it's something new and something that we really haven't seen much of.
Yeah, that's the downside, right? I mean, I think you're right that they are sort of crowdsourcing this to a certain extent. But yeah, the 90s percent of what you're going to hear is going to be either people knee-jerkingly sort of poo-pooing it. But it seems to be, to me, most people are just sort of like, oh, that's great. Awesome job, guys. Thanks for without even really sort of like thinking about it too hard, or at least not talking like
that. Well, and that's not analysis. That is commentary.
Right.
You know, and you're bound to get endless amounts of commentary whether you ask for it or not. I mean, come on. You could put anything out there and you're going to get commentary from both sides on it. But to actually, you know, try to initiate that that drive for help and that call for assistance, that's what I think is kind of noble and unique about this.
Should we explain, for those of the listeners who haven't seen the image, I guess maybe we could try to
go ahead.
Describe what it is. I mean, what's interesting about it is that you have this object, which is giving off this thermal image about, they approximate about 122 feet away, although there's problems with that analysis apparently. And if it is a Bigfoot, it seems pretty clear that what you're looking at is like from about mid chest up, where you see what would be pretty a muscly chest, broad shoulders, and what would be the head kind of sitting on these shoulders with kind of the typical, you know, no neck, visual that people have reported seeing when they said they've seen these things. The trouble with it is that it doesn't really appear to move hardly at all. There are these cows that get in between. It's kind of cool. That's a little humorous element to it. See this cow kind of mosey in front of, probably about halfway between that object and the camera. And if you watch carefully, it kind of looks, but it could be a trick of the camera, that this object, if it is a bipedal creature, looks like it kind of turns its head a little bit, but it's like it's hard to say conclusively. That's it as far as motion on it. It just sits there. Now, those who have brought up in the commentary aspect that they say, well, how do we know it's not a cow? I would find it very hard to believe that it's a cow. I mean, it doesn't look anything like, I can't even imagine an angle a cow would be giving off that heat signature. I'm not making an argument for the Bigfoot, that it being a Bigfoot, but I haven't heard other.
A cow, and then on the top of the cow, like a wallaby.
Yeah, or a leprechaun. Now that could be.
It's got to be rounder. Leprechauns, you know, they have those pointy little hats and stuff. So
yeah,
I,
it's,
I, I think
he could be lounging. He could be in a recumbent pose.
A recumbent leprechaun. Okay, so it's a cow with a recumbent leprechaun on its back. That's at least as plausible as the idea.
I'll go with that. You can't see the hat. The hat's not going to give up, or the pipe. That's not going to get up on the heat. Well, no, if the pipe was lit, it would give off a heat signature.
I'm just so thrilled that in the first 10 minutes we've got the name of the show already figured out. Recumbent leprechaun has got to be. Anyway, yeah, we in our brief warm up to this show the other day, it is, you know, Sam, you made the point that if you didn't have Bigfoot on the brain, like, you know, I do all the time, you wouldn't necessarily look at that and think head, shoulders. You might just think it was some amorphous shape. Is that right?
I mean, that's basically what I'm saying, is that, you know, it's, if you look at it and you think head and shoulders, you can clearly see head and shoulders. Right. But if you just took that image or that snippet of video and you showed it to anybody on the street and you said, what is this? You would get a wide range of answers. And I'm sure head and shoulders would be in there, because our brains are hardwired to identify and recognize shapes. You know, it's the whole idea behind a Rorschach test. And so, you know, there are people who are going to see that shape, not because necessarily that's what it is, but because that's what that general shape is.
Right.
But there's nothing there outside of that to say that that's what it is. I mean, it hardly moves. There's nothing else, you know, defining it. The follow-up analysis, it could have been done better. And that's probably one of my critiques.
Yeah, yeah.
Is, yes, it was great that you got this out there quickly, but the follow-up should have waited. You know, if you're going to show a comparison, get the comparison right.
Right.
Or, it, you know, as right as you can get it, you know, before you put that out there. Because
what I don't understand is the rush. You know, I don't understand why it has to be put out there so quickly. And I would have... And I agree, if I'm critiquing this at all, I would say that, you know, I would have suggested they slow down a bit and get those measurements correct, because a lot of people are going to judge the thermal based on the perceived quality of investigation of the thermal, right? And if it seems like it's rushed and slapped together real quickly, then some people might just dismiss it. And I don't know that Derek Reynolds actually cares. If you listen to the kinds of things he's putting on Facebook, he doesn't really care, which, okay, fine, that's cool too. But
he's a cool guy. I think Derek's one of the coolest... From my experience, I don't think I've ever met him, but he seems pretty objective. Not, you know, he leaves the ego at the door. So the fact that he put this up, and like Sam and you were saying, it's kind of, or more Sam is saying, that it's nice that he's putting it up for analysis. It's, but what I'd like to hear is, if it is something else, I want to hear another explanation, and I haven't heard. And I'm not, and again, I say that from a position not supporting it as a Bigfoot. I don't know what it is,
right?
But I haven't heard any, oh, well, that clearly, what else does it fit? And I haven't heard anything. So,
well, you know,
that's what makes it interesting and yet inconclusive.
Well, here you go. The perceived head movement could be the leprechaun picking up his drink.
Exactly. See?
It could be just like random motion, him taking a sip from his umbrella drink as he was lounging on the cow's back.
It could be a local who was playing Uncle Fester in a play, and he fell in a pit, and he's right up to his tits.
A really chunky one with no neck.
Exactly.
So,
and then a cow comes by, and maybe it's his cow. That's why the cow feels comfortable around it.
What this kind of reminds me of is the Jacob's Bear photo, which at first you looked at that and you're like, wow, that is some funky weird photo. It doesn't look like a Bigfoot to me, but I don't know what the hell that is. And then in the fullness of time, I think it became clear that it was a bear, sort of a mangy little bear.
Or the odds were tremendous, because they had other photos within a short time frame, basic shape. So the odds are incredibly strong.
The pictures before have bears, the pictures after have bears, and there's a Bigfoot in between, but whatever.
Yeah.
So this kind of reminds me of that. Not saying that this is a bear or that it's not a Bigfoot. I can't really tell you if it is or isn't, but just so that you can. There's sort of a, you know, I think that Rorschach test analogy is pretty good, that you have to try. I mean, in the fullness of time, for those people who want to put out other theories, they'll come up with some sort of, you know, permutation of wildlife that could be what this looks like, I suppose.
Oh. You know, the other thing about the image that's when you watch the whole video is that, I mean, it is giving off a pretty cool signature that would match a head and shoulders
Absolutely.
Scenario, but what you have on that right breast, its right alleged right breast, is like it it's all dark. I think it's like a big shave mark. It happened. So why is that there?
The left side looking darker than the right side. I don't know. Could be foliage. It could be, you know, all kinds of things. Thermals are funny things.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't look like a person in clothing. I mean, it doesn't look anything like that. You could. Yeah. You get. It doesn't. Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at it right now, and looks like a monkey, but I don't know. It could not be. Go ahead.
Go ahead. But no, I was just going to say.
Go ahead.
I just got a quick question.
No, I'm kidding.
Do you remember what they said in the analysis? Like, okay, we see this cow walk in front.
Yeah.
So what is it? It's obviously something is blocking its view. What is it that's blocking, if it's a Bigfoot, the lower part of its body?
If you read what it's they've written about it, there's like a little low hill.
Right.
The way I interpreted it is that they're at a higher elevation than the surrounding area, and is kind of where the ground falls off.
Correct.
And so this thing is standing on the other edge of this, you know, little drop off or whatever, and that's why you only see it from about the shoulders up.
So go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was just going to say one other thing, and this would fall into the pro camp is, you know, stillness in and of itself is a form of camouflage.
Yep.
You know, not moving is a common tactic used by everything from prey animals to soldiers to, you know, to conceal themselves.
Right.
And so the fact that this thing doesn't move much actually kind of plays into the idea that it's trying to be stealthy.
That's a good point.
In observing these people or the cow or whatever it is that has its attention.
Here's what I think the cons are. Either they don't know it's there or they don't give a rat's ass, right? Because the cow is totally casual.
Closer to it than the people filming it are.
Right.
They have an alliance.
It's the cow Bigfoot hegemony.
which contradicts moneymakers.
So anyway, the cow seems pretty nonchalant if there's like an 8-foot tall giant primate just over the hill, they're kind of being sneaky. Yeah. At least you think the cow would, I don't know, do something. Say, hey, something. I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe
it doesn't even look up. I mean, it's just...
Right. It totally does not give a rat's. Yeah. Also, they didn't know what they had when they you know, were taking the video. They didn't realize, according to what I've read, they didn't realize that they had what they thought was an image of a Bigfoot until they were reviewing it later, which is never always. I mean, I'm not going to say that's impossible, but that's a strike against you, right? You don't even know what it's a hot thing, right? So I don't know if that's. I think that's a negative net negative, but yeah.
What I would like to see the analysis I'd like to see done on this is what was done on the footage that Daryl shot on the hill with me 21 years ago, and that being when the thing we encountered apparently tilts its head out, which this analysis verified that whatever it was, that it moved by itself. If that technology could be applied to this video, in other words, the goal is to rule out camera movement as the source of the apparent motion of the object. Because I think Sam and I or Brian said that you do notice this slight, like if it's a head, if it's a primate head, it kind of like it looks like it's kind of looking over toward the cow a little bit. Just saying that, you know, it could be whatever trick of the camera, but
yeah,
if that technology and if it does verify that ball, the leprechaun or whatever the hell it is sitting there that looks like possibly a head does tilt, I think that's a pretty good pro argument for it. But but still, even if that, it's still a thermal. You only see the top half, and you know, it is what it is.
So if they didn't know that what they were recording and they weren't thinking that they were seeing a Bigfoot at the time, the fact that you don't see it appear, you don't see it arrive, you don't see it depart is also, of course, that would be fantastic. You could see it like turn around and walk away. That would be awesome, right? But you don't get to see that either.
Which is a great segue to that other video.
I thought
I'd throw that in. You know.
The actual brown thermal video, the one that should be called the brown thermal video because it, anyway,
it was shot by Browns.
Yeah,
because that's what he left in his pants when he saw it.
It kind of sounds like he maybe, but anyway. So yeah, are we done with this? Are we done beating up on this?
Yeah,
for the time being? I'm good with it.
Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah. So the other thermal video that we've discussed on the show before, from Florida by Stacy Brown. was the reason I'm bringing it back is because now it's been on Finding Bigfoot, which of course everyone knows is the source for Bigfoot information in the world, really, I think, globally. Yeah. Well, they did a and I watched the show, and I will say I think it may have been the very best Finding Bigfoot show I've ever seen, only because there was actual evidence, you know, and they were doing a really good job of it of trying to you know, analyze it as best they can in a half an hour or hour long television program. Anyway, pursuant to that, Cliff Brackman has published on his site some measurements that he took of the location, and I mean, at this point, unless other information comes along, I think that's damn good video.
You know, I was skeptical of that. I think if you remember, we talked about that, however, maybe over a year ago.
Yeah.
And those doubts about the way the object moves, I still have, not quite as strong as I did. To me, if you remember, it looked very CG to me, just the way it moved. It just kind of stuttered, but could be the result of the what would essentially be the frame rate of the camera that shot up the thermal and how it transfers. Because like when you compare it to Mike Green's thermal video, which is very fluid, whatever that bipedal creature is, it's very fluid and clearly looks like it's part of the surroundings, like it was in the environment. This not so much so to me. It I still have my doubts on that front. But my biggest doubts with this, with the analysis, is the fact that Cliff Brackman did. Cliff, again, I think he seems like a really nice guy, basically. But, you know, you add the inherent BS that is the Finding Bigfoot show.
Yeah.
And the fact, I mean, I'm just quoting from his, some quick quotes from him from his post about this. Here's one. While it was difficult to take comparison photographs and video from the exact location of the footage, the team has offered data that will give some very good yet approximate sizes of various things seen in the footage. And then he goes on, the measurements below are not exact, nor are they meant to be exact. There are many difficulties with getting exact measurements. Again, so we get this whole approximation problem that we've talked about on the show with being applied to the PGF, and then suddenly coming to a conclusion that seems pretty definite. Well, it's within the, you know, and I just think, and the fact here, this is what it says on Cliff's post here. The most important thing being, the measurements they obtained, the people who supplied this, and again, he bases this on trusting them, which, you know, you can do on a personal level is fine, but scientifically, you shouldn't trust anybody. You should actually do the measurements yourself. He says the measurements they obtained were used to calculate the dimensions of the creature in the footage. Well, if it is a hoax, or if it was manipulated video, why are you trusting their measurements?
Well, but his updated post, he was at that spot, and he did measurements as well.
But still, he admits that it's an inexact thing. So to come to these conclusions, that's about 8 foot four. I mean, I just it's always just, you know.
Yeah. So
I
in principle agree with you. I think that I think that my issues with Cliff is that he's very definite about things.
Yeah.
Much quicker than I would be. In a similar situation, I think that it's just how he is, and you know, you look at the Jacobs bear, which we already talked about. He will debate you until there is no oxygen left on the planet. That is absolutely a baby Bigfoot.
That's just ridiculous. He's got a bit of that, you know. Although I think I've said on the show, I think Jeff has gotten a lot better, but it's kind of that early Meldrumism. It's like he's so into it. I think he's got a base belief or a hunch, which I think is a valid one, that there are probably these types of creatures, right? A macro view.
Yeah.
And then, but when he gets into the micro view or the micro analysis of a particular incident, it just gets overshadowed. He just, his objectivity goes out the window.
Right.
The
You know? I agree with you. You can't, just because if you're fairly certain, as I am, more than fairly certain that these things are real, that does not necessarily mean that every proposed photo or whatever is Bigfoot, but he kind of comes off that way, which, you know, is genuine though. I mean, he's not, I don't think he's being scammy or weird. I just think that that's how he is. He's very enthusiastic about this stuff. So I agree with you in principle, what you're saying.
Yeah. I think he just, I don't know how old he is, and he seems like, you know, and I always wondered, I speculated on, and again, him and Jeff, great guys. I mean, really nice people. And it's almost like, you know, they were raised in an environment probably more small townish than you and I, you being raised in LA as well. And I don't think that we're jaded. I just think, you know, dude, people, things aren't as certain. People can trick people, and they weren't like exposed to that, or they have so much faith in something, either God or whatever. You know, they're on the faith and reason scale. They're a little too tilted toward the faith for their own scientific good. You know what I mean? So it's just so that, you know, when I hear anything from Cliff Brockman now, I know, you know, I just don't even hardly bother. And because it's like, what hasn't he, you know, like you say, the Jacobs right there alone. Or with Jeff still to a degree, although I think he's gotten better and more tempered, is the fact that, and I've said this on the show before, the fact that he still doesn't come out and think that the Freeman, those Freeman clown tracks, that he thinks they're legitimate. It's laughable.
Well, I would say that your criticism of Cliff aside, my opinion is that, you know, looking at the fact that he did the measurement, and I think that he's trying to get good data. He's trying to measure them, you know, accurately as best he can. The recreation that I saw, understanding that none of this is an exact science. To me, it seems like this is probably real. Now, I'm not gonna like go to the mat for it, right?
Let me say this: I'm not ruling it out at all, dude. I do not say, oh, it's obviously a hoax. I'm not saying that. I would say, in fact, I'd be even more. I mean, I'm still in that 75% that the PGF is probably a hoax. But I would literally put this
75. Wait, 75? That's a huge jump.
No,
were like 80 something before. Now, if you're 75%,
I dropped it. No,
that
I
would
think
that would be a big
breaking deal. News.
No, I'm still pretty firmly in the hoax realm.
You were in the high 80s before. Now you're saying
no, dude. Remember, you got to remember that Munz's report, though I think it's flawed. Presumptive.
Don't segue yet, because we still haven't heard from Sam on the Florida thermal footage. But yes, that's
I think I said he moved me about 7 or 8 percentage points, because on some of his points about the flab and the neck, you know, not the neck, the arm possible connecting thing.
Yeah.
But still, the totality of the evidence, in my opinion, suggests a hoax. But this one, not knowing, if I got to meet the people, maybe I would, you know, have the trust he did, and then you'd have that. But then, again, that's still a subjective opinion. I'd like to see other analysis done or other people looking at it besides anybody associated with Finding Bigfoot, because there's such a hype factor to that show that give me a break.
I get that.
Yeah.
Sam?
This has really kind of been one of those things where normally when a video comes out, you know, it's either obviously bogus from the get-go, or it's maybe kind of interesting or maybe kind of ambiguous, but then you start to learn about it and facts start to come out and it kind of starts to fall apart. For me, this video has really been the opposite of that. It came out and I watched it several times, and I thought, that could be a person. You know, one of the things that I had a problem with and still kind of have a problem with now is during the step off, you know, you see the what I'm assuming would be the trailing right hand very clearly, and it looks like a freaking catcher's mitt. It just looks completely disproportionate to the rest of the body. You know, not to say that a Sasquatch or wouldn't have a huge hand, but it looks huge even in comparison to the figure.
It's like a big flipping mitt, yeah.
Yes, which makes me think that, you know, maybe this is somebody in a suit or something that they put together to fake this. But I kind of just left it sitting because, you know, it's a humanoid stepping away from the tree, and there's really not anything else that's going to add to that. But then in seeing the analysis that Cliff put forward, it's actually raised my interest to the point now where I'm not going to say it's legitimate. But it has definitely piqued my interest more. And in fairness to Cliff, and in response to what Scott was saying about the analysis not being, you know, completely accurate, you're not going to get a perfect analysis from Finding Bigfoot. I mean, you're not going to get it from most people. Nobody is going to come out there with, you know, surveyor's tape and, you know, all the necessary equipment and get this thing dialed in 100%. Even if you had the equipment, you still don't know for sure that that's even, you know, that the given positions that you're starting with are 100%
right. I mean, that's you see that with,
you
know,
the same
TGF,
lens,
right?
The thing Munz, I mean, talked about in his, you know, getting the lens right and all that. It's got to be exact.
Right. What we're talking about, or at least what I'm talking about, it's not scientific certainty.
Right.
But it is interesting. Yeah. It's accurate enough to make it much more interesting.
Right.
Now, is it 8 feet tall, or is it 7.5 feet tall, or is it, you know, 7 3/4? We don't know, and we'll probably never know. Yeah. But it's interesting enough because it is clearly very large.
Yep.
And the step off that it performs is actually a really impressive feat, given how much ground that it's covering.
Right.
And lastly, I would really, this is no slight on him, because I've been told that he is a great guy. I would really like to see them get someone more athletic than Bobo to do the recreations. Just being a tall, big, lumbering guy isn't enough, because we're talking about something that, you know, assuming that it's real, and I certainly do, it's not lumbering, and it's not, you know, this big oafish character. It is a very fast, and it is a very athletic, and it is a very nimble creature.
Yeah. You know, need someone. Me of?
Yeah, I do too.
The way it moved, and if you watch, and again, why I still have, though not as strong, some, and I'd love to see someone, if someone could conclusively rule out any type of CG manipulation, I'd like that, because it still has that kind of stutteriness to it.
Well, what you're looking at there, and I think this also kind of explains the large hand, is this is a digitally recording, which I believe the candy bar on the stump. Thermal. Mm-hmm. I believe that was from a thermal camera that was going out to video, so you would have had a better, a higher frame rate. Anyway, this was recording digitally within the unit, and it's still pretty cool because it's a thermal device, but it's relatively low end in that it's highly pixelated. You don't have a great resolution, and you're recording to this memory inside. And I think that explains the pixelation. I think that explains the low frame rate. And if you think about how it would extrapolate the image, it could make certain things look bigger than that. I mean, it could just basically make pixels, you know, filling a pixel has to be on or off. It has to be black or white. And maybe that would make the hand look bigger than it actually was. I mean, I don't know. I'm just a total speculation.
Well, then you also have the whole that the image itself, and depending how much heat, you know, like if you do a human to the film subject comparison, maybe they give off different amounts of heat. So if there's more heat coming off, it's going to look bigger, wouldn't it? I mean, if it's a hotter read or I don't know on that. I'd like it's
no, my experience, my limited experience with thermal is no, they don't glow or anything like that, if that's what you're thinking. What I thought was the comment that Cliff put that I guess I had either forgotten or didn't know is that it was wet, you know, and that tends to wash out a thermal because it makes
I just want to say one more thing about on the pro side, on the pro Bigfoot argument for this video that we haven't talked about really at all is the heat signature is consistent. I mean, if that's a guy naked
all the way across, right?
That to me is the best argument for it right there.
Well, and you know, we've talked about it a long time ago on the show, but Cliff did a comparison. You can find it on YouTube if you look for it, of himself in clothing, in a monkey suit, and naked running through the woods, thermal. And there's a big difference in all three of those. And none of them look like Bigfoot, you know? I mean, or some of the thermal that I've seen. They look like a guy in clothes. Look like the suit is the worst one, obviously. And then, I think that's absolutely in its favor because it is a uniform heat.
Has there been any thermal imagery that you guys seen of mountain gorillas or orangutans? That would be interesting to see what kind of signature they give off.
Yeah,
with that much hair, to then do a comparison. Because if you had that footage, that would be a great thing to do, like at a zoo at night. Can you break into one? Sam?
I'll do it.
Okay.
No, Sam should do it. I mean, he's got that wily backwoodsman thing going on.
Yeah.
I'm the resident woods ninja, so yeah, I'll take care of that.
You can do
it. Wouldn't that be cool?
No, that would be really cool. That would be, you know, let's do this. Let's unleash the BFS nation on this problem.
Subject. You know, actually, it's not a very well-known fact, but in North Georgia, there is a private gorilla sanctuary. Where they take I know there's gorillas, there may be chimpanzees, I'm not sure, it's been a while since I've read up about it, but yeah, it's basically animals that are rescues or you know, they're in situations where they can't be put into a zoo or anything like that, and
if we could bring thermal footage of an actual primate, an actual hair-covered primate into the world, that would be something that we actually could contribute instead of just basically, you know, leeching off of the Bigfoot world. We could put something back into it.
That would be that's a great idea. You'd have like long hair. You'd have for like orangutans, and then the mountain gorillas, especially around the chest area, which seems to be comparable to a lot of sightings of, you know, purported Sasquatch sightings.
The one that I would really like to see, and the one that has always been one of my favorites, and I think a very good candidate for some of the more apey descriptions of Sasquatch and like skunk apes, is the Siamang. And I'd say, I believe it's a giant gibbon, actually. I may be wrong about that, but they are very cool, and they make some amazing hooting vocalizations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that would be really neat.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I think
get on
there
it.
You go. So we can shut down shop. We've actually accomplished something. So let's call it at 36 minutes.
Bing.
Bong bing.
No, we got to keep going. We got to keep going. What did I say I wanted to talk about?
Were you going Muns. Into Muns? Where were we
well,
going?
There's a what was the show called? The Channel 4 show.
Sykes show.
Yeah, and I feel bad because I haven't watched it.
I've watched parts of all of them, but I haven't seen any of them in their entirety yet. They're all just sitting on my computer, taking up hard drive space.
Mine too. I just haven't had a chance. So why don't? Okay, we're gonna do a little review. You're gonna be our reviewer. What do you think?
It's neat. I mean, it really is. It's a neat show, regardless of how you fall on the subject. For someone who had a passing interest in it, I think it would be a really great show. There's loads of like scientific-y words and, you know, labs and things thrown around that make it all seem really legitimate. Top notch.
That's science.
You know, all the computers are scrolling like matrix looking numbers in the background. Yes.
Excellent. I'm going to cut in now, Paul's 36 minute description of the time that the TV people,
that's what I was thinking about. Like we could Paul here to
it's
go.
Not even, he's not even here, tangent. And we're ragging. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Paul.
But you know, it's a really they're really well put together shows. The guy who does the narration is a little bit of a douche, but
gotta put it out there. Just gotta say what it is.
He is. He kind of comes across as being like, you know, he's a little bit of a
no. You were watching the British versions, right? Not that cut together American version.
I'm watching the British versions.
In the UK, it was three shows, and in the US, it was one show that was all edited together.
See, I can't imagine what a train wreck that would have been because there's so much in these three episodes that the idea that you actually got all that into one episode. That's like 10 pounds of bullshit in a 5-pound sack.
Pretty much what Sharon Hill on her site, she said that she quite liked the first three episodes, but when she saw the US version all edited together, she said it was horrible.
I mean, it would have to be a train wreck because once you see these three episodes in their entirety and how they're put together, I can't even begin to fathom it. But there's some really good, you know, points and the graphics and all of that are really top shelf stuff. For me, the best moment in all three episodes that I've seen so far is in the Almasti episode, which was the last of the three. There's a shot of, I think it's Red Square. You know, they're kind of, it's one of those segues where they're bouncing around with a bunch of different images of locations and areas and, you know, setting up the whole premise of the episode. And they show this crowd shot. And there's a guy completely photobombing the camera because he's taking a selfie of himself in front of God knows what.
Good.
And the camera just, you know, is completely oblivious as it scrolls by. So that was really entertaining. And there's some pretty neat footage in that one that I think some kids shot. It's like a snow scene, and they're following these tracks, and suddenly you see this big, dark, bipedal figure in the background kind of doing its due.
Is there a lot of trees? A lot of, like, I may have seen that.
Yeah, they're like low trees. They kind of made me think it's you know, like Joshua trees or something. I don't know if they're actually...
maybe I haven't seen that.
Whatever. And this thing is back behind them, and it's kind of loitering around, and then suddenly it makes this really sudden burst, you know, like off screen or whatever. So it was kind of neat. And unfortunately, I haven't even seen through that episode, so they may have completely discredited it. I don't know. But just the little bit they showed actually
made
it
look... I'm sure they did. I mean, if Sharon liked it, they had to have, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and
can I just interject a quick question?
Yeah.
I just want to say, as far as interesting, not that what you're saying wasn't interesting, what I, you know, conclusions or, you know, realizations they came to via the hair analysis of Sykes was, is it true to say that the one thing that they did is that Sykes believes that Xana, who was this purported possible Sasquatch type female creature that was in captivity, what they learned about it was that it was from that she was from Africa. She was a direct African.
Right. She was an African descendant. Yeah, I haven't gotten to that part of the episode, but I've read a good bit about that, mostly from skeptical blogs and things like that.
Hmm.
Because of course, you know, they're the first ones to bring out the evidence that's contrary to popular Bigfoot lore. And so in that respect, that's a good place to go if you want to read, you know, if something comes out and it's not pro-Bigfoot, you need to go to a skeptic blog to read about it because they're going to be all over it.
So wasn't Xana like hairy? I mean, was it
a
hairy
African? Well, she was. See, what I don't understand about that, and it kind of frustrates me a little bit, and it almost typifies one of the problems that shows like this have. Is this not entirely regurgitated information? Her exact genetic history is, as far as I know, isn't known, but I was very much under the impression that they had proven undoubtedly that she was modern Homo sapien, whether she was African or whether she was, some smaller, group from Siberia or whatever. But, I mean, they had done DNA analysis, I believe, on her son. And they had exhumed at least one of the skeletons. I don't know if it was hers, but I know they exhumed the son skeleton and did DNA.
And he was a leprechaun.
Exactly. He was recovered.
Way to tie it together.
Yeah.
Maybe she just had a skin condition or something.
So, I mean, why even, why even bother unless you want an easy one? You know, you want an easy one that you can knock out of the park and definitively discredit. And to me, that's why that was included in the show. They already knew 100% that she and her son and whatever descendants they had were going to be modern Homo sapien because it had been proven already. So all he did was add the amplifying information that she was, that she was an African descendant. So to me, that looks like it's a setup. You know, they want one that they can put in the not Bigfoot category definitively.
Right.
And so they include that. And the way the guy sets it up, and this is one of the reasons why I say he's kind of a douche, he sets it up like, oh, this is, the mysterious Xana and, blah, 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 and talks about how important it is to us.
Huge.
To those who support it. Oh, yeah, it's huge.
We talk about Xana on the show all the time.
This is one of the, this is one of the... Yeah, I mean, this is one of the main tenets of Bigfootdom is, the belief that she was a Neanderthal or, whatever. And that's the other thing I would add about it is I don't know who the dumbass was that thought that Bigfootologist was a good and fitting name for what we do.
What's his name?
You need to go sit in the shame closet for at least a half hour. Every time they say it on the show, I would physically cringe. I mean, it's that bad. I've seen it written before, but I've rarely actually heard someone speak it. And to hear it in the show with all these British accents, just constantly repeating it over and over again.
Especially since it's well established that the proper term is Sasquatcherists.
Sasquatcherists.
It's that
Sasquatcherists.
I believe
even that sounds better than Bigfootologist.
I think Bigfootologist, that isn't that that Rettman Mullis's, I mean, isn't that his term? You can go to Bigfootology.com, and he is the president of Bigfootology, chairman of the board.
I don't know that he can take complete credit for necessarily coining it. I don't know. But I definitely, I mean, that's...
It's horrible. I agree with you. It's horrible.
He's underneath.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I mean, you can't even make the argument. Like, you know,
Matt Johnson is also a Bigfootologist.
People who study primates are primatologists. Okay, well, fine. Well, if Bigfoot is real, it's almost certainly a primate. So you're a primatologist. You're not a Bigfootologist.
So here's the problem, though. To be a primatologist, you actually have to learn and go to school and things. You just can't call yourself a primatologist, can you? Can you just, like,
call yourself...
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe what I just said is incorrect. Maybe you can just call yourself a primatologist. But anyway, I agree.
If you know your chops, then you know.
Oh, I did want to say, because there's this little tiny, you know, thing that's hanging out there. Not tiny. It is physically tiny. But this hair that the NAWAC collected a couple of years ago now, which was sent to Sykes, as far as I know, it was not included in any of the analysis of the show. And we at the NAWC have no idea what the status of this hair is. Apparently, if it's been analyzed, we don't know. We don't know anything. We know he has the hair because we have delivery confirmation that we sent it and he received it, or someone in his lab did. But we have absolutely no idea what the status of the hair is, or if it was analyzed or anything. But I do not believe it was in the show.
So. It would seem to me what they probably do, and it would be, you know, if you guys had bothered to do that, I mean, you guys did bother to do this, so it would seem like they should at least have the courtesy to give an answer back one way or another. I assume what they do is they first do a morphological analysis. In other words, they take it, they put it under the microscope or a high powered microscope and see if they can identify it that way.
That's what we did. Oh,
you guys did that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We collected all kinds of hairs, and a lot of them you could just throw out as raccoon hair or whatever. I think there may have been some bear hair in there. I don't recall 100%. But this hair was weird. It wasn't like a human hair, and it wasn't like it was kind of like a human hair, but it had some characteristics that were unusual. So anyway, we couldn't identify it. Of course, we're not at Oxford. We thought it was a cool hair, thought it was a cool sample. We sent it off to him, working with Jeff Meldrum. We sent it off to Sykes, and then it went into a little black hole. And if it is in his paper, we went through this with Melba Ketchum. I can't talk about it because it's in the paper. So right now, I hope when the paper is released, we'll find out. The only thing I'm going to piss me off is if we sent this hair to him and it just disappeared. You know, that's going to piss me off. But
I heard he sent it over to Melba.
She would it's a little backup analysis for him. Yeah.
She's a fan of the show, I've heard.
So. I thought I heard as well, too. I don't think so. Anyway, so there we go. That's our take on the Channel 4 Bigfoot show. What was it called?
Hang on one second. Let me
Not Finding Bigfoot.
The Bigfoot Files. Bigfoot Files, it's called. Bigfoot Files.
Bigfoot Files, if you do.
That's what it was called in the UK. It was called Bigfoot Files.
Do you think, you know, just reading, perusing on our Facebook page and elsewhere, do you get the feeling that Sykes is maybe not fully objective? And I'm not saying this in some kind of conspiratorial suggestion, but it seems like the vibe I'm getting is that he's kind of had these. And maybe it's because in the cahoots with the TV production people he's working with, they're trying to bleed this thing out, and it's maybe I don't know. I just kind of get the vibe he's already, well, that can't be, that was from Oklahoma, that can't possibly be him. So, you know, I don't know. Right. Just kind of that he wouldn't, if he had to choose, he'd go, well, you know, if it's America, come on, what are the odds there's anything like that there? Whereas Yeti stuff.
I think that it's a good question. It seems to me that, I could be off base here, but I think that the British have a greater affinity towards the Yeti because, you know, they were basically, masters
Hillary of
Hillary
and all that.
Right, exactly. So maybe the Yeti is a slightly more interest to them. I think that he has analyzed things. I think that whether or not I don't have a problem if he walks into his analysis with a preconceived idea of what he's going to find. That doesn't bother me in the slightest because his analysis is going to be conclusive one way or the other. If you have a physical specimen and you perform his analysis, you're going to find something, and it's going to be obvious what it is, right? So I don't really care if he thinks that Bigfoot are real or might be real or entirely impossible, because if he does his work and he's ethical in the way he does his work, and I have no reason to think he hasn't been, he'll find what he finds. So, but on the other hand, I don't know. I hate the fact that he got into with a TV show. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps at all.
Maybe he's a little feeble. Maybe he's getting a little up there. Maybe he needs some cash. Could be.
All right. So you're saying he's okay. Well, the
heroin. Heroin costs a lot of money. That's what I'm saying.
The opinions of Scott Harriet are his own and do not reflect those of the producers of the Bigfoot show.
I mean, it seems like the record
you just basically said he was an addled drunk drug addict with no money.
I merely offered it as a possibility, joking suggestion.
Some say he's a heroin addict.
I didn't say that. You did.
Others feel he's broke because of his heroin addiction.
He lives in Britain. He has to be broke. Anyway, says the
because of the socialism.
Right-wing.
Right. Okay. All right. So moving right along, speaking of things that are all over the skeptical blogosphere but nowhere else, actually the opposite of that, our friend of the show, Bill Munns, finally published through the Royal Accommodant Inquiry, Jeff Meldrum's paper, his analysis of both the creature on the PGF and the PGF film stock. And I don't want to turn this into a PGF real or fake conversation.
Come on.
Honestly, no, I don't.
Come on.
The observation I want to make is I didn't see that. Well, I don't read all the skeptical blogs, but I didn't see that anywhere. And
I see what you're saying.
So how come
it also just got released too? It had been released,
but not even like a word of, oh, by the way, Bill Munns has released. There was not even that.
I don't know. You know what I think part of it is you had pointed out that for whatever reason, when we had Bill on the show, it was surprising to you and me and probably Sam and Paul that we didn't have as many downloads on that show. It might just be that people feel Bill Munns has played out. He's made his best effort, and that's it. And so they don't even kind of deal with him. I mean, I appreciate Bill's efforts. I really do. And I think at times he's objective. But at times I think he hasn't been objective. And I don't think his full – if you look at this total analysis he's done, I think it is flawed to a degree.
So
it's not as – well, it's not as conclusive.
But my point – my point being – again, this gets back. I don't believe that objectivity is necessarily like a requirement of all science, because as humans, we're going. I mean, we could say we're objective. Like, well, I have no opinion
whatsoever.
You should
attempt it, though. I mean, you should. Yeah,
but I don't believe.
Then it's not science.
My problem is there. Where is the analysis on the other side? Where is the analysis of the pro? You know, Patterson was a lying cheat bastard who fooled us all. Where's that analysis? Where is how a person fits into this costume that Bill says a person could not fit into this costume?
Right.
Here's how our friend Bob Hieronymus could be inside the shape of the Patterson-Gilman film subject. Where's that analysis? I've not seen it. I've not seen any of it.
Well, that's a difference.
Outside of like the Bigfoot forums. I want something that doesn't count. I want to see something like what Bill Munns has done.
Right. Well, that's where you're right. Subjectivity comes in. It's like for you, that's what you need because you believe that it's probably a Sasquatch. It would, I think, bolster my already existing belief. And by the way, I used to believe that the Patterson film was probably real. But I read Greg Long's book, and I still recommend to you and anybody who's such a believer, as flawed as that book is, don't poo-poo it. I mean, if you're going to argue a topic, you got to read both sides.
Well, I'm fully aware of both sides, and
read the book.
I don't.
Is what I'm saying.
I'm really aware of what's in the book without having read every page of the book. I have the book. I've read parts of the book, and my point is, what's in Greg Long's book is hearsay. And
all of it's hearsay?
Oh, quite a bit of it. So where is the analysis of the creature that points out that it is obviously a person? How did he make this costume? How many different ways in Greg's long book was the Patterson-Gilman costume described as being created? I know of at least two, possibly three different ways that it was described in that book. How does that make any sense? And how do any of those three match what you see on the film and refute what Bill Munns has put out in his paper?
All right,
that's what I'm looking for.
Okay, all right.
Not from you necessarily. I'm looking at this from like from the you know the other side of the argument. It doesn't exist.
There's just people. Well, first of all, a lot of people don't care as much as you and I. They figure. Hold on, let me just. I agree. I just don't think there has really been a serious attempt made. What would help? What would bolster Bill's paper? What he did with Jeff. Is one thing is the fact he's the only like Hollywood experienced guy who's making these claims analysis. If he got like three of the guys who came and backed his opinion, and then they actually, that would be a great film actually, them attempting circa 1967.
That's the film he wants to make that no one will make with him.
Yeah, I know. Well, see, first of all, I would not trust Bill Munz's conclusion. The guy totally believes the film is right. And anybody who totally believes something, plus he take those photos. I'll tell you I bet anybody could come up with a better costume than he did. That baggy piece of crappy.
Let me just say something though. Yeah. Nobody has. So you're saying that this person who is an expert, say what you want, think what you want. You're basically saying that he cannot do anything worthwhile because he thinks the film structures is real, and the reason he thinks it's real is because he's done analysis of the technology that was available at the time. So you're saying that because he came to this conclusion and now believes it to be real, he cannot be useful in any sort of discussion of the subject.
You just said
anyone could do a better suit than he could, yet no one has.
That's not exactly what I said.
Where is what I'm saying is that.
Let me answer the freaking point. You just keep repeating yourself. What I'm saying is, yes, I agree. No one has done it yet. No one has created that. I don't think it's as possible as Bill Munz because I think he's biased. So when he attempts to do something, I'm not going to buy. Well, if I can't do it, then no one can do it. And I can understand your viewpoint. You believe it's real. And for you, subjectively speaking, you need the costume to be close enough made.
Here's what I would say. My point is, if let's say we're talking about cold fusion. Let's say we're talking about anything, right, other than the PGF. Some people say that's impossible. Could not be true. End of story. Someone else says, but look, my analysis says that not only is it possible, it's probable. And the other side's response is, it's impossible, and anybody who spent any time at all could refute what you just said, even though I'm too busy to do that. So that's what we're talking about. You want us to be scientific. There is no scientific analysis of the film that shows it could be a person in a suit.
But there's no scientific analysis that shows or definite proof that there's such thing as big feet. Show me something that matches. Don't change the subject. I'm not changing the subject.
Bill Munz's analysis, which is pretty damn good, says that it would be very hard. Well, you say but it would be very hard to put a person in the suit. If you think that, go get someone to, you know, basically write the opposing paper. I bet Jeff Meldon would publish it. If it passes peer review, he would publish it.
But the fact that I'm not a suit maker, dude, it's like that you can't.
Well, no, you said anyone could do it.
Dude, it was exaggerated.
So find me a suit maker. This is my point, though. Not that whether or not you think it's fake and I think it's real. My point is, nobody on the other side is doing jack shit to prove that this thing is a fake.
But you don't have an example of a Bigfoot body to show that these things exist to begin with.
That's neither here nor there.
No, it isn't. It has no, you need...
Again, you're arguing, is the film real or not? And I'm trying not to do that. I'm saying that one guy spent an awful lot of time and money to point out that it would be impossible for this to be a person. And you're saying, well, you don't know what a Bigfoot looks like, so you can't say that. We do know what the film subject looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So where's the paper from the other side? That's all I want to know. Sam, jump in and say something.
Can I respond to what you said? First of all, it's not as though Bill Munz is voicing the opinion of other expert filmmakers. We've already been over this. Stan Winston thought it was a fake. Rick Baker thinks it's a fake.
Right, and you think it's a fake, and none of you have done any work to show that it is my point.
That doesn't mean it's not a fake. Okay, that doesn't just because someone hasn't done the experiment for you. That's what you need.
I am not
but that's
arguing.
Not what science needs.
I am not. Yeah, this is my point, man. Science requires you not to just say what you think, but to show that what you think is real or at least likely. And no one has done that from the other side, outside of like continual, like impossibly long blathering on places like the Bigfoot forums, which does not count. You need to present your evidence in a way as Bill Munns has. The other side has not done that. That is what science is. So if you want science,
if you don't have an actual type specimen to say that those things even exist, you're arguing. And look, dude, couple this in with both Meldrum and Munns admitting it's not proof.
Wait a minute. Did you just say that we have to have a type specimen to solve the PGF problem? Because I think that's what you just said.
Oh, dude, you're so
assumptive. Sam, say
that doesn't mean killing one.
I'm not wading into the slap fight.
What's that?
I said I'm not about to wade into this slap fight.
Come on.
Okay, in response to Brian's original question way back like 10 minutes ago, one of the things that I think that has happened is natural human apathy, which is amplified by the internet. Bill Munns has been doing this for quite a while now. I mean, at least what, 2-3 years now? I mean, he's been actively engaged in this. He's been on the Bigfoot forums for I don't know how long. People have had ample time to decide, rightly or wrongly, what their opinion is going to be. So honestly, at this point, for him to put this paper out, yeah, it's great. And I think there is some good stuff in there.
Me too.
It's just not going to accomplish anything because those battle lines are way too well defined already. And like I was saying earlier, if you want to see something that comes down against Bigfoot, go to the skeptical blogs. You know, that's true. But in the case of this, it doesn't go against it. You know, it's not a strike against us, but it's also not something new. This is something that's been going on for a long time. He's just now finally putting, you know, these finished pieces on the table. But a lot of this information has been out there for quite a while. And the people who are going to read this and be interested in it have already read, you know, a great amount of what is already out there, and they've already formed their opinions, and they're not going to be swayed. And
I would say I could totally be swayed if for me, see, this is where it gets into the subjective thing. Brian needs, and it isn't science that because they've already admitted it doesn't prove it's not a guy in a suit. That's it. They've said that in the paper. We accept the possibility that it could be a guy in a suit. Bill admits in the history of human creation, things have been done that have fooled experts, quote unquote experts, Piltdown Man, for example. So I applaud that because it's like we talked about in the last show. It's this accepting of uncertainty. But I will agree with Brian on this. For anybody, and I'm not in the camp of it's absolutely a fake, not at all. Not at all. But those who do claim that, yes, I would say, okay, so Brian's claim is correct.
All I want to know is in what other question, in this field or any other field, old or new, it doesn't matter, call it a 40-year-old question, a 50-year-old question, that everyone has already figured out what they think. In what other way is the other side of the argument, whether pro or con, allowed to have their opinion and serious people think that they're being serious when they have this opinion with literally nothing to back it up except to say, I don't like what you just put out there. I think, well, whatever. You said that it might not be true, so there, that's enough for me. I want to see the hardcore analysis of this film that will show that it's a guy in a suit. I want to see the opposite of Bill Munns. Someone going out there and doing that. And all I'm saying is, why has that not happened? If it's so simple, if it's so easy, this is what I hear. Everyone's like, oh, I could do that. Well, you know, and I do know that there's at least two guys that have started and very publicly did it on the Bigfoot forums and other places. And both of them just sort of like evaporated and disappeared when they got to the hard parts.
Well, you know what also needs to be done? I think the Patterson film has to be the access to it that Bill, who was a big believer, was given, has to be also given to the skeptical side as well. It has to be to look at what he's able to see in there. And so if a serious recreation, which I agree, I'd love to see that. I just don't think it's that impossible as because Bill Munns, even though he's...
I'm not saying anything's impossible. I'm saying it hasn't been done.
Yeah, I agree.
This is my point.
That doesn't mean, therefore...
You know, the other side of it was that the whole skeptical blogosphere completely ignored the fact that Bill Munns came out with this information.
Yeah,
because it doesn't fit their narrative.
I agree. And I agree that those who that is a purely skeptical position, and I'm in complete agreement with you that anybody who makes an absolute claim, well, it just could be. I mean, or that it is a fake, is, you know, that it would be the prerogative to them. But in a probability realm, and again, I don't think, while the film is the most important, the film itself is the most important part of the analysis, completely ignoring the circumstantial stuff surrounding it is not scientific as well. It's the circumstantial stuff and the film. And for me, in my opinion, when you take that all together, it's more likely a hoax. Could I be wrong? Absolutely. Absolutely. But I, you know, 78, 75, 90%. No, I don't know. I just don't. Yes. It's amazing that all that stuff would happen behind the scenes. And then lo and behold, they happen to get a Bigfoot. The odds of that happening to me
final,
are unbelievable.
Final word, Sam, so that we can go into listener questions.
Okay. I'm the living embodiment of what I was talking about, and that was the only thing I was going to add to it. At this point, even though I am as interested in this subject as I am, I could really care less about the PDF. And unless you came out with something that just blew it wide open, either a suit or some...
Gimlin confessing?
Gimlin confessing, which honestly at this point I don't think that would be enough for something.
No, I don't think that's probable. If it's a hoax, I don't think that's
probable. You know, unless you came out with something like that on the con side or on the pro side, if, you know, we got one and it looked exactly like Patty.
Well, that wouldn't be enough. Or, Scott's already said that's not enough.
You know, well, or but you know, but my point is I'm just completely apathetic to it. I'm a complete and total Bigfoot, or Patterson Bigfoot agnostic. And it's going to take a lot more than what is out there now to garner my interest or to sway me one way or the other. And I think there's probably a lot of people, they're just burnt out. And, you know, and with Munn's stuff, like I said, so much of it's been out there for so long. You know, yeah, he's presenting his papers now, but a lot of people, you know, they already know what they think. And what he's put out there now, I don't think is great enough on top of everything else that he's already presented, that it's really going to change a lot of people because of the fact, as demonstrated by you and Scott, that it is such a polarizing thing. You're more likely to solve the abortion debate, I think, than you are to solve the PGF debate when it comes to skeptics and believers. And that's all I got to say about that.
Listener questions.
Boom.
Were you trying to get in there quick so I didn't say anything at the end?
Please. Well,
I'll just hang up on you if you get...
No, I'll tell you. Seriously.
I had the microphone on mute for like 10 minutes and I didn't even realize it. I started to say something and I looked and I was like, oh, wow.
Hey, I got a question, not a statement, about... Now, has Munn's gotten... And it kind of goes to the point I made earlier. If Munn's can get other costume makers, okay... From that time, modern guys, again, not CG guys, actual, you know, and they work together. And Bill Munn's, I would, you know, you can't be in charge. You need somebody who truly is like objective, coming, doesn't believe, is new to it almost, but knows history of costumes. And for one thing, and I think it's very interesting and should be read by believers and non-believers alike, is the whole back flab argument that if you got like several costume guys saying that if that can be done, we don't know how it was done. And I will give you this, if it can't be demonstrated within the next like 10, 15 years, I think I would be swayed more toward believing that it's real. But right now, as it stands, even though Bill has moved me a little bit,
so
he definitely has.
So what we're saying is it's really okay for Bill to do all this work to try to show how it would be very difficult to create a costume that fit a person that shows the types of, like, you know, anatomical types of visual, you know, things that tie into actual primates and people. It's okay for him to do all that work. On the other side, we're still just going to let them have a pass at it.
But your assumption is that Bill is absolutely correct in all of his analysis.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that Bill has done all of this. And you're saying, well, you know, if they ever did, You know, so what you've got is some offhanded remarks by some costume guys that say, no, that's a fake, even though they've never shown how it would be done. I totally agree with you. I would love to see that. I believe that is exactly what Bill has tried to put forth. That's exactly the project that he's tried to put out there.
And right, no but he needs more than himself because he's established himself.
Dude,
no, it does matter.
Were you on the show where he was on and he described what he's trying to do and he's trying to get people to take up the other side to prove him wrong?
Yeah.
And they won't do it.
Well,
it's okay. It's not a big deal. They can still say it's fake. They don't have to try. They can just say it, and that's okay.
You know, maybe it just doesn't. They're not as passionate as about it as you and Bill are. You know, I mean, it's not. That doesn't mean.
Oh,
it can't
me and
be.
Bill. No, and nobody else in the show is passionate.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Well, but neither one of us are costume makers. So,
Thomas Gospel wants to know what we think of the sounds recorded by Mike Patterson of Ontario Sasquatch from YouTube. And I swear to God, I've not heard these. Have you heard these, Sam?
Yeah, I've heard more of it than I care to hear.
or even That's enough about for me. I'm just going to go to YouTube.
Without really going into great detail about it, you're talking about someone who has quite literally, and I'm using literally in the correct sense here, quite literally made the claim that he has successfully played tic-tac-toe with a wood ape. I'm going to leave it at that.
Next topic.
So there you go, Thomas Gospel.
Wow.
Melanie was asking about Grace Harbor. We've talked about that. Andrew Austin wants to know if a Sasquatch went shopping on Black Friday, what would they be shopping for?
Deals.
Yeah, they just want bargains like anybody else.
Care what they get. They just want a deal.
They work hard for their money. They just want to make sure that they're stretching their dollars as far as they can.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
What were those the ones that Sam brought up in the BFS backstage? The one that
John flint? P. Douglas. John P. Douglas. Here's an idea. See if you guys can fabricate a fictional Bigfoot report. Haven't we done this before? Could be a sighting or any type of encounter, but make it convincing. Doesn't have to be a War of the Worlds kind of thing.
I thought this was a great question because as I was reading the questions on our show page. When I got to his, I immediately started doing that. And I did not stop until I had literally like made up a fault report. And it was fun. And so I thought, wow, you know, that was, I mean, for me at least, that was entertaining. And it's something that I've thought about, you know, I mean, you know, so often if you're really a student of the game, you see things that get added to the lore of Sasquatch over time. You know, someone will come out and make a claim, and inevitably, regardless of how ludicrous that claim is, in a short amount of time, someone else will come forward and say, you know what, I had the exact same thing happen to me. I mean, it's one of the, you know, the core tenets of Sasquatch lore, and it's how the mythology develops, completely independent of the actual subject itself. You know, I mean, I think at this point, you could make a very strong case that there are two types of Bigfootery or Bigfootdom or whatever you want to call it. There's the actual study of the actual source, and then there is the lore and the mythology and the storytelling that is completely independent of the actual animal or, you know, subject itself.
But how does a third-party person tell the difference at this point?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, when you come across something like that, I mean, my point of that is I had even wondered, you know, what would happen, you know, is there a way ethically and you know, effectively that you could float something out there and just track it, you know, watch its progress as it, you know, spreads like a meme through, you know, the forums and the Facebook groups and all of that and just see how it develops. Knowing, you know, 100% that it was BS from the get-go.
Ethically, there's no way to do that.
This is something that actually happened to me once, and it happened completely unintentionally.
Oh, it's happened on the BFF as well.
And I had almost forgot about it until a friend of mine a few days ago sent me a photo that was similar to a photo that I had made years ago and said, hey, you know, there's this picture floating around of I think it's the London Underground, and it's an advert from you know, whatever governing body they have. I'm sure Paul could go on a tangent about, you know, whatever authority is, but it's basically advising people that if they see ghosts, you know, riding the subways, that they need to report it. And, you know, the assumption here was that this was a hoax. And years and years and years ago, the very first time I ever went to Oklahoma, I had taken a photo of a sign on the Talamina Drive. And it was by, I think it's the National Forest Service, but it was basically saying that this area was closed to any kind of, you know, people or traffic or anything. And the reason for it was because of bats. There were bat caves in the area, and they didn't want the bats to be disturbed, so they had closed this area to any kind of human traffic. And so I had Photoshop, and I thought, oh, you know, this will be fun. And so I changed the, you know, the word bat or bat caves or you know, whatever it was, and I changed it to Sasquatch. And I did it, you know, it was a decent job. I mean, you know, I'm no Photoshop ninja, but it was a pretty good job. And so I posted it on this forum, you know, the small forum. And when I put it up there, I put it up there and say, oh, ha, ha, you know, look what I did. You know, even and if I remember, I even had like the real photo and I had the one that I put up. And but the point being, it was obviously a gaffe. I made no bones about the fact that this was fake, you know, that I was doing this for fun or whatever. I mean, it would be no different than, you know, me Photoshopping, you know, somebody's head onto, you know, an animal.
Right.
I mean, it was that ludicrous. And I made it a point. So fast forward like a year or so later, it might have been like a year and a half, and I find out that there's this group that's actually researching this photo. And, you know, they're contacting like government agencies and, you know, looking up different laws and things, you know, trying to get, you know, calling forest rangers. And I thought, this is insane. You know, I put this up as a joke. There's no way, there's zero possible way that you could go to the source of this and not understand immediately that this was a joke. And yet here we are, 18, 24 months, whatever it was, forward, and there's this group of Bigfoot investigators who are investigating my photo. And so I contacted them and I said, look, you know, and unfortunately, you know, these were some people that I'd had a little bit of animosity with. And but I reached out to them and I said, look, this is a joke. You know, I made this photo here. I have the, you know, I have the Photoshop file. And they didn't believe me. You know,
really?
I mean, even see, with now, me right
just,
there.
Sam, I'll never trust you again. I just wanted you to know that.
And so
you're part
of
the conspiracy now. You're part of the government trying to
exactly.
To cover
yes,
that.
I'm. Right. I'm in the NSA. Right. My cover's been blown, but you know, it just to me, it was one of those moments where I really just I sat there and thought, we are never going to solve this because we can't get past this level of, you know, of just. I mean, to me at the time, it was just lunacy. Particularly right. After I had reached out to them and said, dude, you know. Come on, I can show you the original thread where I posted this. And that wasn't enough. But so, yeah, crazy. When I got to that question, I came up with this little sighting in my head. And it took me, you know, it was like a 10-minute long thing or whatever. And
what's your sighting? So what's your fake sighting?
So
this is a fake sighting.
No, you guys made it sound like it. I mean, I'm kind of more... I want to hear about yours.
Mine would be simple. If I wanted to see my stuff up on the BFRO website, I would just tell them that I was driving through, you know, Central Oregon somewhere, and this thing, this like, I don't know, 7-8 foot tall, dark brown thing, walked from one side of the road to the other. It only took like 2 steps to get across the highway. I couldn't believe it. My wife is in the car with me. She won't even talk about it. And there you go. I mean, that's it. I think that would get you on. I think that, you know, they'd call you up. And, you know, you tell them where it happened and they'd go take a picture of it or something. And that would be it.
Mine was, you know, several years ago, a buddy of mine, we went fishing to a local river near here. It's somewhere we'd been before.
Now, this is the fake sighting, right?
This is the fake sighting.
I just want to put that out there. This is fake sighting.
I had no idea you were such a bullshitter. Good God.
But that's one of the things. Like, the first thing I thought is, okay, this has to be a real place. Like, somebody's going to call me. I may have to take somebody somewhere. So, okay, this is a real place. So I immediately think of this river near my house where a friend and I have gone fishing before. And I say, okay, so, you know, several years back, me and my buddy, we go fishing to this this river nearby. It's somewhere we'd been before, and we had good luck there. And so we go there one night, and, you know, immediately when we got there, the vibe was different. It just, you know, there was something in the air. You could feel it.
Nice touch.
And, you know, we didn't even realize we were both feeling it at the time. It wasn't until afterwards, and, you know, we got to talking about it, and we realized we both felt that way. And so we start fishing, and, you know, we're going along, and it's just a normal plain night. There was a little bit of moon, so you could kind of see, you know, but not real clearly. And then we started hearing the splashing sound. And, you know, at first I thought maybe it was fish or, you know, then there's muskrats and stuff in this waterway. And I thought maybe it's one of them. And, you know, we just kept hearing it. It kept getting a little bit closer and a little bit closer. Well, it became obvious that, you know, that this was something sizable. And I thought, well, you know, this is a deer crossing the creek. And so I wanted to see it. And so I had a flashlight in my bag with me, and I fished around in it. As I'm fishing around in the bag and I'm making noise, this thing starts to get agitated. And so now I'm trying to get the flashlight out even quicker because, you know, I'm thinking this deer is going to go back across the creek and never get to see it. So finally I get the flashlight out and I shine it up, and walking away from us on the other side of the river is this thing. And man, I don't know what it was. It was standing about waist deep in the water. It had its back to us because it was moving away from us. And, you know, what we could see was at least 4 feet tall. So, I mean, God knows how tall this thing was. And as I shine it, it turns, but it didn't turn its head. It turned like its upper body, and it kind of whipped around. And when it did, its eyes got real red. And that was it. Me and my buddy were done. I threw the flashlight down. Oh, we left the fishing gear, scramble up the bank, and get in the truck, peel out. And I went back 2 days later to get the gear. It was all still there. You know, no sign of this thing. And to this day, like what Brian said, my buddy won't even talk about it.
Won't even talk about it. That's
we don't even hang out. We don't even hang out that much anymore because, you know, it became such an issue.
Were you worried about your meth lab?
Yes.
At the time?
We weren't actually fishing. We were tending to our moonshine still.
He sold all his fishing gear on.
Yes. I should have thought. Yeah.
He gave it all away. He gave all his fishing gear. Yeah. He won't even go back. Won't even do it.
But yeah, yeah, I mean, ultimately, what you want, I mean, and I don't know, maybe we're helping people out in hoaxing, but yeah. I mean, what you need is you need a certain level of believability. You need a certain amount of things that you can bring to the story that are true. And you need a certain amount of things that cannot be disproven. And you need a certain amount of things that tie into what people expect to hear when they hear a story. And I'll be honest with you, watching the Bigfoot Files episode of America when Justin – is it really Smea? Is that really how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Smegma. I've never heard anybody say
that. I think it's Smegma, isn't it?
See that? Gross. anyways, when he's on screen and he's talking – you know, and they go out to the area and he's like, this is exactly where it was. I had actually already done this little thought experiment in my head. And so I'm watching him perform with that in my mind. And I'm thinking he's doing exactly what I did when I made up my fishing story.
Here's what I think, though. I think a lot of this, of course, is all just a cautionary tale for anybody who's doing investigations into Bigfoot reports and why reports are not as good as they could be as far as like evidentiary, you know, quality goes. But a lot of the guys that you're talking about, the guys who make up stories, they're not content with the first version of their story. Either they can't keep telling it the same way over and over again, or they get excited and they start to augment it over time. Right.
Right.
And I think that's what you see with him. Is that, you know, his anyway, so I think that it isn't, you know, if you could just live with it walked across the road and, oh, I pulled one over on those Bigfoot guys because that's total bullshit. Your story about the fishing gear and everything else is awesome. But as that was being investigated, as you had people talking to you about it and everything else, you'd have to maintain the same version of the story.
Right.
So convince yourself. I mean, you'd have to see it in your head, right?
Yeah. And you would either have to keep it so simple that you didn't have to worry about, you know, amplifying. And that's one of the things that I've read, and I always try to apply this myself when I'm listening to somebody's story, is if something is true, a person typically does not feel the need to convince someone that it's true because it is true and they know it's true. And so when they're telling you something, their story will be more about, you know, X to, you know, A to Z, 1 through 10. They're going to just lay these things out and tell you what happened. It's someone who's telling a lie, they know it's a lie. And so they feel like they have to convince you. And so they will constantly throughout their story be doing things to try to convince you that it's real by saying something like, you know, I would give up everything if you could have just been, you know, if I could have just, you know, I would give up my house. That's one of the things Justin says when they're interviewing him. I would give up my house. I would give up anything. You know, this is someone who's trying to convince you that what they're saying is true.
Right.
And if that's the case, then that's, it's not 100% guarantee that it's a deception, but it is an indicator of deception.
You know, another one, if you notice while they're telling the story, a huge stain starts to form below their belt, just gets bigger and bigger and starts stinking. What the, what is that? I've always felt is a good lie detector. I think you guys got it all wrong telling the stories. Here is legitimate. Here's how you pull one over on the man. All right. So let me tell you something. I was at the 7-Eleven there near David Sheely, my buddy, who was hanging. He'd tell me there'd been skunk ape stuff going on there. And I said, David, look, I think you might be full of bullshit. And he said, well, what if I am? That doesn't mean what happened didn't happen. I go, you know, you got a point there. So he took me to this place. He said, don't wear any pants and take this condom with you. And I'm like, what is that? He goes, I'll explain that to you later. We get out there. And I see, first I thought was a crocodile on two legs. Turned out it was a crocodile on two legs. There was a circus in town, but we got beyond that, had a couple drinks, moved on. We heard an ungodly, and I mean ungodly, scream that just resonated through the palmettos like a Sasquatch. That's all it could have been. So I went to the authorities, again, pantless and a condom in my hand, used by that point, and I told them what had happened. And every one of them, to a T, every one of them deputies, told me the stories that their relatives and their relatives and a drunk Indian and another drunk Indian had told them that it happened in that exact same area spanning back 400 years. You put that in your book.
That was beautiful. I'm literally weeping.
We're gonna get sued. Okay, moving right along.
Sued by who? David Sheely?
Probably. I don't know. Yeah. Tristan Norton says, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Tristan. I read the wrong name. You're going to get all excited thinking we're going after you. No, it was Tristan Norton, because Tristan posted twice. We have a TV show here in the UK called Come Dine With Me. Basically, it's reality TV with food and odd people, but the general concept is sound. Which characters, past or present, from the world of Sasquatcheriness? No, you can't do that, Tristan. Would the team invite to dinner, and why?
Patterson.
Gotta have Patterson at the table.
Got it, Patterson.
Right? There's no way you can't have Patterson at the table.
And, God, who else? I was lucky enough to meet DeHinden.
You knew DeHinden. I didn't. I would like to talk to DeHinden. Of course, it could be present, too, so there could be somebody in the present, but we make fun of all those people, so probably.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, you know what? You know who? William Rowe would have been a cool guy.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, William Rowe. That's a good one.
You know, wouldn't it be weird, because that story is so, you know, revered by a lot of people, when you meet the guy and he talks just like the character I was just doing.
Yeah,
yeah, how you doing? His eyes twitching up and down. He's,
he shook me like a dog. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, well, anyway, but when the Martians first told me about this, I asked, oh, great. There goes another story.
Well, here's the thing. When you meet your idols, you are invariably disappointed, right?
I mean, to some degree, usually, yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Sammy?
Man, that's tough. I think Bro really would be an awesome one. I mean, I could just imagine sitting around a campfire with that guy and drinking a couple of beers. I never got to meet DeHinden. I think that would be great. I would love to meet Ivan Sanderson.
Good one. Yeah.
Because the guy was obviously, you know, a little out there. And characters like that were just so over the top. They can be a lot of fun. I think, I don't know.
What about, you know, like, so I can't think of a specific name, but any of, like, those early reports that Green had in his books, like, from the 1800s, those guys, whoever told the story that they had seen something, or not like Fred Beck was kind of seemed like a nut job to me, kind of, from everything I've read about him, but just somebody who reported something, like, in the 1800s, and then it got into a newspaper. That would be kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's breaking the rules, but I think, you know, the other way I would answer this is I would like to go back You know, when those guys were out in the woods together, you know, the Four Horsemen or whatever it is of Sasquatchery.
Sasquatchery.
Right. When they were out in the woods back in the 60s and early 70s together, I would love to be there with them at that time. Before they all decided they hated one another and before they got all jaded and pissed off at the world. you know, back when they were still fresh and bushy-tailed and excited about what they were doing. All that, you know, just that's I would love because that you know, whatever golden era, whatever. But that was before it seems like half of what we were talking about was shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a relatively new phenomena in America. I mean, it was this new.
Well, from the standpoint of somebody actually investigating it. Yeah. I mean, the stories have been around forever, but you didn't. It culturally and from an investigative standpoint, like there weren't serious people trying to do serious work. Yep.
I would have loved to have met Titmus. I would have loved to. Have
oh yeah, that's a him. Good one. Yeah,
Titmus. You know, he was kind of to me. I mean, to me, he's really sort of one of the unsung heroes of the early days. You know,
totally
when you talk about like the Four Horsemen and stuff.
The thing about Titmus, though, you know, I thought the same way about Titmus because Green always, you know, gave him glowing reviews in his books. But then you hear other. And the fact that he supposedly had two sightings and he saw two or three climbing a mountain, or he thought he did, and then he found foot. Maybe he did find, but maybe he didn't. But I came to the conclusion that maybe he wasn't all that great, or maybe all that objective, or I don't know, because he was kind of a quiet guy. He didn't. Right. Well, but I had the same like reverence that
we're going to have dinner with him to find out for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you could. I think we'd all agree, if we could go to one place, it would be in a small craft hovering over Bluff Creek that day.
Yeah. Except for Sam. He doesn't care. show favorite Jorge Krenko wants to know.
So can't do that.
I can't do it either, but I do it anyway. Has Brian Sykes' DNA results done anything to sway your thoughts or belief on the Bigfoot subject? No, how could they? I mean, you're asking Brian Sykes to – I mean, he couldn't possibly – I mean, because what – You know, this is, you know, kind of how they couched the first show, the first Bigfoot Fall show. It's like, oh, the Yeti's a bear because this sample turned out to be bear. It's like, that doesn't, anyway, no.
Yeah.
Sorry, no. Jorge. Sorry. Yeah. Nice try.
You Jorge. Chai Skeptics, that's a pretty good
one. Chai Skeptic. Oh, this really long one? There's like 14 questions in
well,
here.
That,
let's
I
just try to, let's try to knock them down.
Yeah.
For each member of the show, what is your current belief level that this animal exists as represented by a scale of 1 to 10? I'm assuming 10 meaning absolute certainty, 1 meaning no way in hell. Fine, I'm a 10.
10.
Well, see, that's interesting. If it's belief, yeah, it would be a 10. But obviously, knowledge, if you put it, if it's a, if not, if absolute knowledge is 10,
we don't have proof.
I would say 9.9321.
Okay. Assuming they cannot be killed any animal – wait a minute. Assuming they cannot be killing an animal all day, every day, how would you think a wood ape could be getting on average 5,000 calories a day? You know, look into how other large primates, how much food they can forage and how little caloric intake is required. There was something – I'm going to try to find this. But, It isn't. You don't need as much food as you think you do, and a foraging animal can actually collect a whole hell of a lot of food.
Yeah, I don't think. I think that's a total miss. I've heard that argument from other people. Well, it's big, it has to. No, dude, it would be an alpha predator, and it which means they don't have to move around a lot. They'd sit and eat,
but it may have been brought up on the show, Brian. I think maybe you brought it up. I can't remember where I heard it. It seems like it was through us that I became aware of it, that orangutans in particular have incredibly low caloric needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Regardless, even though they're this big animal, they have a very low caloric need because their metabolism is so slow.
Yeah. When they're not moving, their body is doing practically nothing.
Like
exactly.
Brain function, heart, respiratory, which
right.
is
their heartbeats are so there you go, Chai.
I don't think he was being.
No, whatever. I'm assigning.
He's a good guy. Chai's a good listener.
Whatever, Chai.
that would be what.
It's not even his real name. How can you trust this man? Would you ever consider tracking down Daryl and have Scott and Daryl do a show covering their sighting? He's talking about your Daryl, not my Daryl, right?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
Well, Daryl, you know, dropped out after, you know, right after this thing happened. He got, speaking of obsession, I mean, he got so obsessed by this. His wife left him.
Yeah.
And then he got out of it. And then he kind of was interested in it again. I don't, and the last I heard, Daryl was actually writing, doing some kind of writing. And, you know, our contact is like every few years, I'll get a message from him somewhere. And how you doing, man? What's going on? And don't know where he's living. But, you know, I would be up that if we ever do this film we had talked about, which yeah. Brian seemed to be hesitating. Were you hesitating last show, or was I imagining that?
No, we just need to get the dates figured out.
I think it'd be
I'm
friggin'
totally
awesome.
On board. I just don't know that our dates are going to
yeah.
work.
Well, okay. We can maybe, yeah, maybe we yeah. can, I don't know what I'm doing, but anyway, we'll talk about it.
If
I'm totally for it. I think
I know.
Awesome.
So am I. I'm absolutely on board. Sam's the one. He's the one that's working behind the scenes to kill the whole project.
Sam, is that true?
Yeah, turn your mute off, Sam. Sam, are you there? Oh, Lord. Did we lose Sam? No, he's
yeah, no, no.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. Sam,
I did have my microphone muted. I was like surfing on the internet. Sam, no, I'm the Buzz Killington of the Bigfoot show, yeah. undoubtedly.
Absolutely.
No, no, no. We're talking about like the possible film project. You're interested in doing that, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Dude, I'm the one that floated the whole idea.
Yeah, you're right.
You're in favor,
give me
right?
some credit.
Now, seriously, can I make one point about if, because we know, because Paul A. is in Britain, and he's probably the most responsible. No, he's not the most responsible of all four of us, but he seems to be the busiest, and his schedule fluctuates a lot. If he was unable to do it, I mean, I think we should still do it with us, but we still, at various times in the film, we have him on Skype. He's at the headquarters, you know, some way. The bald head will be awesome, and he'll be giving us ideas.
I think that regardless of the big project, which is what I view this as, that we absolutely need to do the MST3K, where we do like a Google Hangout and watch either Finding Bigfoot or like The Legend of Bigfoot.
See,
or
that's
Mysterious
just that's
Monsters
just easy shit. We just need to do that. We just need to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no excuse
so
that
simple.
Other than just laziness.
Right.
Yeah.
It would be easier if we were watching something that was airing on television, because then we wouldn't have to worry about syncing all of our stuff, you know?
Yeah, I don't have TV, so...
Oh, because you're out in the woods.
Because once again, I'm the Buzz Killington of the show.
God,
I do not have TV. All right. I'm trying to be respectful of our time, because we did have a target. We're over the target. So I want to keep going here. What's he say next? Oh, is everyone currently out of Area X? Kind of. And when does the on-site research resume? Well, you know, if passes prologue, we tend to hang out there when it's warm, and we don't go in there in the fall when it's cold and when the leaves are down. But there are people in and out all year long, all the time. Brian, oh, this one's for me. Do your children express interest in what goes on at Area X, and do you tell them? Yeah, actually, my son is really into it and wants to go, and I haven't decided to take him in there as of yet. But yeah, he's interested, and my daughter is, you know, she's 10, so she thinks everything.
Kill it, son! Kill it! Kill it!
Oh, another one for me. Now I just feel embarrassed because these are all about me.
Bell of the ball.
Cool project, dude. People want to know.
When driving the last few miles into Area X, oh, this is good, actually. I remember reading this. What is your general feeling? Nervous, dread, fear, excitement, etc. All those except dread. The first time, and this is related to his next question, how many NAWC members have left the area early due to being overwhelmed by the situation? Well, me, I did. The first 2 weeks that I was supposed to be in there, when we had our sighting, I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks. I only stayed for about 10 days. I left early because I was over it. I couldn't take it anymore, honestly. And so the next time I went in there, there was a bit of dread, but now I don't have that anymore. So there is, you know, there's excitement. There's a little bit of nervousness because you never know what you're going to get. You know, getting in there you really are leaving one world and entering another. So it isn't like you just turn off and there's the campsite. So there's a sort of a, you know, this in-between stage that you are sort of entering this other kind of world, which is pretty cool. But I wouldn't say that at this point fear or dread are part of it, not anymore. And has anyone in X been struck by a rock? I think so. Not like on the side of the head or anything, But I think people have been struck, like, I can think of one guy that got hit on the foot. I mean, if Daryl was here, he would tell me the 14 different times this has happened, because he remembers this and I don't. But are they missing on purpose or by accident? And that's a really good question, and one we've talked about a lot. I have absolutely no idea. I think that if they wanted to hit something with a rock, they probably could. But I also don't think they're putting themselves in the best spot to throw them, because they're not out in the open typically when they do this, right? So it would be luck, I think, if they actually did hit us. But anyway, that's just my own personal opinion. And the project pool, the pool project is done.
Yeah.
Yeah, the pool is in. And
are you skating yet?
Currently, it is frozen solid.
I was going to say, have you got your ice skates out yet?
Yeah.
No, actually, no, you can't. You can ice skate. I'm sorry. But yeah, it's done and it's frozen, because it's cold. Great. It's cold here. It's very cold.
What kind of cover do you have?
Done and frozen.
Do you have the rollout kind, or do you have the kind that you have to like stretch out over it?
Well, you got two kinds, right? The rollout, the electric kind is what you do during the summer. And then the stretch out kind is the winter cover, because that's the one that captures the snow but lets it drip through when it melts.
Yeah.
And,
that's what we have on ours now. So.
Yeah, the winter cover.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad.
Our cement pond. Yeah.
All summer long, my backyard was a complete disaster, and now I get to look out at a pretty backyard with a frozen pool.
Sweet.
But it'll thaw. Summer will return.
Perfect for leprechaun ice skating.
Speaking of which, what a segue! Flint Hills Drifter wants to know, how could a creature that we think so closely resembles man walk through snow for miles without suffering frostbite? How can such discovered track lines be real? Why are there so many? Oh, let's just go with that because that's one subject.
Evolution? Next question.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that this weekend when I was up at the cabin in the snow, where there's no snow where I am now, but there is snow up there. There's all kinds of animals with soft feet that walk through snow all the time.
Yeah, bear. You know, bear was the first thing that came to mind.
I'm thinking of. There's wolves up there that have soft dog feet, right? There's rabbits. You know, there's all kinds of things.
One of the things that I think it was Krantz started it, and I think Meldrum has since picked up on it, is that in estimating the thickness of the fat pad
on a
wood ape's foot, and how. You know, with people, it's a particular, you know, depth, and how with the Sasquatch, you know, you could be talking about something that's up to 2 inches thick. And if that's the case, I mean, if these things have this, you know, 2 inch thick fat pad that's, you know, all calloused and worn on the bottom from, you know, constantly being barefoot. I think that they would be much more, you know, you're looking at it in a, you know, they have human like feet. Because they're shaped like human like feet.
Yeah.
Right.
But they may very well be significantly different than human-like feet.
That's exactly right.
And one, you know, it's one of those little anecdotes that really never seems to get mentioned, but has always piqued my interest, is the Elkins Creek cast, which is from Georgia. And, you know, it's one that I'm particularly interested in. The behavior that was described around this area, presumably by this one wood ape, sounds like it's atypical behavior. You know, this was an animal that was coming very close to this one particular trailer, stealing food, you know, acting in a manner that doesn't make you think of normal animal behavior. And then they finally find, you know, this one clear print in its cast. And one of the things that that Meldrum had observed in the detail on the cast is that it looked like this might be an animal that was malnourished, because there are certain places on the foot where you can almost see an indication of bone, as if there was very little fat on the bottom of the foot. And so when this thing put pressure down, the bone actually made enough of an indentation in the skin that it was transferred to the track.
That's a cool cast.
Yeah, and that ties into that behavior. And so, again, you know, and that just goes back to with them walking in snow. You know, you can't assume that, you know, just because they have, you know, a roughly human-shaped foot with five toes and one is bigger than the rest, and that they're going to have the same physical properties as we do. So, and, you know, I don't know, maybe they're lashing otters to their feet and sliding over the ice, or
rabbits.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
I think that you know, and also that the issue of calluses. I mean, if you have calluses on your hand or on your feet or whatever, you know that they're not real good at transmitting sensory, you know,
yeah.
tactile.
Well, and you also have to – well, there's two other things. One of the questions that is asked is, you know, if these things live in areas where there's snow, why don't we find all of these snow trackways? So there's actually sort of a lack of that type of evidence to begin with. So maybe they're not moving through the snow much if they're in these areas, or maybe they're leaving them entirely. And the other is, I think personally, a large majority of the trackways that are reported are actually misidentifications of small animals bounding through the snow.
Yeah, snow, like snowshoe rabbits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm reminded when I was in Willow Creek in 2003 for that that big symposium they had there. There was a woman there who took a liking to my friend Bob Strain, kind of an unhealthy liking. But anyway, she had. Are you talking about Kathy? No. Different woman. That's a good point.
All marriage is unhealthy.
I want to be very clear. That is a very good point. It is not Kathy hilarious. I'm talking about. Okay. There's another woman, and she had pictures of Bigfoot tracks in the snow that she said proved that they turned into rabbits and things because she showed them. She had these images. And so if you hang out where there's snow, and I do, sometimes snow falls off of branches and it lands on the snow and it makes weird little shapes. And it's nothing but snow falling off of a tree, right? It's like these literally are a quarter of an inch deep and they're all uniform. But she had one that kind of looked like a foot, like it was all by itself. And then next to it was a smaller one and then an even smaller one. And she said that was proof that the Bigfoot was shape-shifting as it was walking. But it was walking. I mean, literally, these things were like 6 inches apart. And she was crazy. I mean, clearly, crazy.
Snow is such a inaccurate and ambiguous medium
horrible.
Recorded sharks. You know,
horrible.
I think it was 2 years ago, we got an abnormal amount of snow here. And so the first one, I missed the opportunity. And the second time we got a good amount of snow, I made it a point and I went out and I walked around in my garden barefoot. And over the course of, it was like 7-10 days or so, I went out and I took pictures of the tracks and kind of documented, you know, how over time the tracks changed and degraded.
Right.
And then, you know, and what was most interesting to me was there was one where it was actually a boot print. And over the course of the time, my boot print melted and refroze and melted to where it took on this classic, you know, sort of foot shape. You know, there was no tread apparent at all.
Yeah.
You know, it where the big toe would be, there was actually a bigger indentation there. So it didn't look like the front of a boot. It actually looked like, you know, where toes would be. And so that was really illuminating to me.
I remember
me, so.
Destination Truth went to Russia looking for the Almaty, and they were in there during the winter when there was snow on the ground. And they documented what they thought was a really cool trackway that was clear to me to be exactly what you just described, but a bear trackway that had that had melted out and got really big and looked like feet, but was probably a bear. I mean, to me, that's what it looked like. But yeah, so snow's a crappy substrate. Yeah.
You know, there's also the possibility that, as far as not finding lots of Sasquatch tracks in the snow, maybe they know. I mean, I always remember Byrne talking about a study that indicated that I think many animals purposely don't want to leave because they know they leave tracks.
Right.
So yes. if a cougar does it, then it would completely make sense that a Sasquatch would maybe know it's leaving an indication. So,
well, Meldrum talks about it in his early days. He was doing some research in. I think it was chimpanzees. I'm not exact. I think it was a chimp, and he was trying to see how they were walking, and he had them walking over this pressure substrate where he could like see the pressure of their foot, and the chimp figured out that he was getting treated to walk back and forth. So he made his tracks go away so that he would get more treats.
Right.
I think I'm telling that story correctly. And also this weekend when I was out walking the roads around our cabin. I could see there was a, I think it was a wolf because there were no people tracks with it, so it could have been a stray dog, but there are a lot of wolves in northern Minnesota. And I think it was either one or two wolves, but anyway, you could see little animal tracks coming out into the road and going back into the road, and then the wolves would go and investigate those. They would follow them. You could see them go into the woods and then come back out again. So animals know about tracks.
Yeah.
They just do. What the hell are you doing, Scott?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a bubble wrap thing. Sorry, it's behind the mic. I thought it would escape the
No.
Because sound only travels one
Sorry.
What the
face,
hell?
Guys. Come on. Let's keep moving with this thing. Jeez.
Okay, so same dude, Flint Hills Drifter, wants to know, why are there so many stories that seem to come out of the Folk, Arkansas area of sightings by local farmers and ranchers, yet most stories I've seen from the Pacific Northwest are from hikers and travelers and not from the people who work the lands in that region every day?
That's interesting.
I don't know that that's true, first of all.
I think
the premise
more,
is wrong.
I think that's
well,
more stereotyping.
There's also more hiking in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, there's a lot
more
hippies.
People.
And yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's as much, you know...
Your professional walker to farmer ratio is totally skewed between one area and the other.
Yeah. I don't think that necessarily means there's anything wrong with I don't even know. I just think the premise is
Well, you know, you have to look at like the land usage too. You talk about somewhere like that's rural Arkansas, rural Oklahoma versus somewhere that's in the Pacific Northwest, you know, you don't see a lot of established hiking trails in Falk or in, you know, southeast Oklahoma. They just don't exist.
Right.
Even in parks and, you know, areas that are meant to be, you know, used recreationally, there are not established trails for you to go, you know, just strolling out on anywhere near what you would see in, you know, I don't know, Washington or Oklahoma or Oregon or anything like that. There's no PCT.
Right.
There's no Appalachian Trail through that Four Corners region. But what there are a lot of are people who are out there and are farming or hunting, you know.
Making moonshine.
Making moonshine, making meth. so, you know, I think it's more of just, it's a difference of the activities in the region and not anything, you know, that's any indicator of anything else.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep.
Wendy Salinas wants to know, is the NAWC, I think what she meant is, it looks like she had her mobile phone autocorrecting for her. Is the NAWAC worried that perhaps other organizations like the BFRO might find Area X and explode it? I think she means exploit it.
I like the way it's worded.
Yeah.
They're going to go in there and just blow it up.
Yeah. Solo dropping Molotov cocktail bombs out of low-flying helicopters. Sons of bitches.
I think that's obviously a legitimate concern.
It is a legitimate concern. The thing is, there are people in the BFRO who know where this is the way I put it. Area X is not a secret because there are a lot of people who know where it is. Over the years, I mean, the first group of investigators went down there in like 99, right? So there's been a lot of people down there. A lot of people not in the NAWAC know where it is or have a general idea of where it is.
Is it legally, does it have to be?
Well, this is the point. It isn't that it's a secret. It's that we don't disclose the exact location for a couple of reasons. One, you know, we're playing for keeps down there and we don't want people just wandering in who shouldn't be there. Also, and most importantly, it's private property that we're on almost all of the time. And the people who own that property and we have an agreement that we will not disclose the location because they don't want people going in there and looking for Bigfoot other than us because they have a relationship with us and are comfortable with us. So it isn't that, you know, I think that some people think of Area X like buried treasure, and that isn't the way it is. I mean, we don't think of it as buried treasure. What we say is, like, we don't disclose the area we're doing our work for a variety of reasons, one of which is the people who let us do our work there have asked us not to do that, so we don't do it.
Over the years, how many incidents do the people who own that property believe that they've had as far as visual sightings or things such as rock throwing? And
visual sightings, it's a relatively low number. I don't know exactly. I can think of a handful off the top of my head.
Over like what time?
I don't know exactly. I mean, they've been in there for a really, really long time. So I'm gonna say this is a total guesstimate. Six. I may be wrong. I'm gonna say six visual sightings. Mostly when they're hunting. I think that's when they've had most of their visuals. The ratio of non-visual to these other sort of like very suggestive things like rock throwing and you know vocalizations and things like that, that's a lot more common. And as it is with us, you know, when we're in there, we have had sightings. We're trying to instigate sightings though, which is different than them. They're not doing that. So I think that So anyway, I guess that answers Wendy's question. We're at 153.
Jeez, are we gonna? Yeah, it's gonna be able to save enough for if Paul is gonna do a show next week, or
oh, there's always ample.
There's always ample. Yeah.
I'm gonna end with Lee Kennett, who wants to know at the start of the show, can everyone other than Scott have a bet on how many times he'll click a pen, smack the desk, and punch the mic?
Or my question is, who would have ever guessed that bubble wrap would ultimately be?
So whoever had bubble wrap on their bingo card.
Well,
you guys,
first of all, how do you know that every sound is being made by me? You don't.
I can tell.
It's a sound.
The viewers can.
Oh yeah, the listeners. They can tell. You just thumped your desk again just then.
I did?
Yes.
I also took two peas during the
I know.
The show.
I know.
You do not know that.
I absolutely will give you the time marks of when they start and end.
No. I know what you heard. You heard me pouring.
Your prostate is like an unexploded World War II munition. You never know when that thing's going to go off.
Woo!
Okay, okay.
Good ending point.
We're done. So, I wanted to do some sort of year-end thing. I'll talk about that
later. We can do that.
No, yeah. I wanted the top stories of the year kind of deal.
I think we've still got a whole month. I mean, we can get.
Well, that's right. And I want people to give them to us. I want people to like suggest, and then we'll do top 10 that
Are
way.
We still
I mean,
taping, or
that's
did you tape?
Oh, I'm still taping. Yeah, I'm always taping. Yeah. So that's how we started, Scott, way back in the day, 2007. It was December 31st, 2007.
No way.
Yeah, I think so.
Holy crap! 6 years, dude.
I know.
We've made so much money.
Tons. People have no idea how wealthy we are because of this show. The very first show, episode one, The Year in Bigfoot, was December 31st, 2007. That's exactly right.
Wow.
Yep.
That is cuckoo baganga.
All right. Well, I'm going to call it a day then, unless anyone wants to say anything else real quick.
Well, what you said, to formally put it, everybody should put in their like year end.
I'll do something on Facebook for that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Be kind to Bigfoot. That's what I want to say.
Be kind.
Be kind.
Sam?
What kind of hippie bull crap is that?
How's the farm, Sam?
The farm is good.
What is happening on the farm this time of year?
My chickens are molting, and so my barn looks like someone exploded a couple of feather pillows, which sucks because I'm going to eventually have to clean all that out, and I'm really dreading it. Donkey's good.
Good.
He's good. His new thing now is... somewhere on the backside of my property, he found this like 6 or 7 foot long tree limb that had blown off or fallen off of one of the trees. And he likes to drag it around in the pasture and show it off. It's like a dog out there. He shakes it around.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is that a common donkey behavior?
I have no idea, but it's a sight to behold. The pigs are good. What? He doesn't know. He doesn't really chew on it. And it's only like he gets in these like frisky moods where he sort of rears up and, you know, shakes his head like he's this, you know, majestic stallion or whatever. And he's just a freaking donkey. I think it's kind of for show.
We all aspire to be greater. You don't want to crush his dreams, man.
Yeah.
Now, donkeys can reproduce. Mules can't. Is that correct?
A mule is the sterile offspring of a donkey
and a horse. Right. Okay. So,
yeah.
All right. Maybe he's showing off for the ladies.
Well, he doesn't have the equipment. So, if he is, then it's all in vain.
What are you folks eating down there? What's the dinner, honey? Donkey dong. Yeah.
I read on the internet today, this is we're still recording. Everyone can just stop listening now. We're done talking about Bigfoot. I read on the internet today.
Yeah.
Once I ask about the farm, we're pretty much over.
We're all fine.
No, I read on the internet today, so it must be true, that testes have taste receptors built into them.
What?
I know. That's what I said.
You're telling me that like my balls can taste?
Yes, there's taste receptors. In testes.
Wait a minute. So if your scrotum magically disappeared for a second and your testes were just hanging there and you like put peanut butter on them,
crunchy. I don't have that level of. All I know is what I read. It was a tweet from a Twitter account called Fact Hive. So it must be true because it says fact right there in the name.
Right.
There's taste receptors in testicles.
That is.
I don't know what you're tasting with that because, like you said, there. But anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Weird.
Rule 34 has been put into effect. Yes.
Hey, did that article, is there a corresponding in
because, no, you know, there never in is. Women? With, that's the, no, well, not yet. I haven't, they haven't, they haven't said anything about that yet. You never know.
See, wow. that's what I hate about the internet is, yep. is the fact that you can just say anything and attach, you know, you can make a statement that could be absolute complete bullcrap. You know, put it in a pretty font over a picture of like a lake or, you know, some majestic ruins, and then attribute it to someone who, you know, existed long before the internet, and nobody's going to know if it's real or not.
Hey, Glenn Beck's got to make a living. Come on.
One of my pet peeves is I'm a Taoist, and I'm very familiar with Taoist texts and Taoist writings, and there's some in particular where you see these texts, which are from the Tao Te Ching, which is the, you know, it's the core book that Taoism is based off of. And you see these texts, and they're attributed to everybody from the Dalai Lama to Gandhi, you know, all of these figures who are, you know, who are viewed as being, you know, spiritual and peaceful people. And they all come from the Tao Te Ching. And conversely, you see texts that are attributed to Lao Tzu, who wrote the Tao Te Ching, and it's stuff that he never said. It's stuff that other people said.
Well, I was a religious studies major in college, thank you, is that, you know, you have scholars who argue whether or not Lao Tzu actually wrote the Tao Te Ching.
Yes, there's a debate within modern Taoism, you know, was it, you know, did he write it? Was it a collaborative effort?
Yeah.
You know, when you read it in its entirety, and it's very short. I mean, you can easily sit there and read it in one sitting. You know, there are parts of it that have a flow to it, and there's parts that don't. And you know, you could almost imagine, you know, different people writing different parts of it. And the story itself of how it came into being has a very mythological ring to it. You know, supposedly he had become, you know, sick with the ways of the world, and so he decided that he was going to ride out into the desert and die. And he comes to the last guard post, you know, before this wasteland, and the guards recognize who he is, and they ask him what his business is, and he tells them, and they're so upset and they're so concerned because they realize, you know, how important he is, that they basically arrest him and detain him. And send word back to the emperor and say, hey, we have Lao Tzu in custody, and he's saying that he's going to go ride out into the desert and die. What do we do? And so they send back word, and they say, you know, he has to write everything he knows. And once he's written everything he knows, he can leave. And so the very first line in the Tao Te Ching is, the Tao that can be written is not the eternal Tao.
Exactly.
And it's like a big F-U. Yeah, it's like a big FU to the whole concept of, you know, the thing. So it all plays together really well.
Yeah, and then that part in the Tao Te Ching where he's looking for a golden ring, and then the you know, golem is with him. And I just thought that was a little weird.
It's a little over the top.
Yeah.
So, we could do a whole show just reading stuff off the internet.
Random crap, yeah.
So this was like 11 o'clock this morning. The other one that they did a little while later was, it takes 59 minutes to make a single Oreo cookie.
Really?
No. There's no way.
No. Well,
how could you possibly?
It's on the internet. What are you saying?
Because
you got to bake the little cookie.
Yeah.
Two of them.
The cream. It's got to be put together.
You got to make the cream. This goes back to our testicle conversation. Apparently, you got to snap them all together. You got to wait for it to cool.
It's not BS that it might not take 58 minutes from, you know, raw ingredients to cookie. The bullshit part is saying it takes that long to make one, because you're implying that 58 minutes passes in the production of each Oreo cookie. That 58 minutes might be what it takes to, you know, to take those raw ingredients and turn it into a cookie. But I can guarantee you that in that process, they made 10,000.
Well, the point is, you started with a bag of crap, and at the end there was a cookie, and it was 59 minutes from the beginning to the end.
We have officially jumped the shark on this show.
Oh yeah,
this is a whole new concept. This is a whole new podcast concept.
We're past the shark. We're now jumping giant squid.
If I had known it was going to be like this, I would have started drinking. I mean, it is that.
Yeah. I think
Scott already took his shirt off.
We should do a spinoff show.
Sweatshirt.
Everyone doesn't realize we can see you. We need this. I think this is the beginnings of a spinoff show. I'm just putting it out there. All right.
Shit,
well,
shit on the internet.
We're done.
That's what we can call it.
That's shit the co- that's we'll call it. That'll be the working title. We'll come up with something
shit,
better.
Shit on the internet.
All right. We're done.
Done.